You're listening to the Fiasco Brothers Radio Network. Welcome to Black Op Radio, the voice of political conspiracy research. To call in, we have a secure line ready. Area code 604-525-4167. Again, just call area code 604-525-4167. You're listening to Black Op Radio, the show NSA doesn't want you to hear. And now your hosts, Anita Langley and Leno Sanek.
Good evening, everybody, and we're back. This is Black Op Radio number 4, starting today, 12th of July, year 2001. And today we have with us Jack Cashel. He's going to be talking about a video that he's just released, Silenced Flight 800 and the Subversion of Justice. And Jack, are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, well, we're a little bit late getting you on the line, but sorry about the confusion there.
Oh, that's okay. That happens sometimes. But I'm ready to go and ready to rock and roll here.
Great. Well, maybe we can just start by getting a bit of personal background on you, and maybe you can tell us how that led into the creation of the video.
Yes, that's a good question. You know, I'm an independent producer and writer, have been for a number of years, and I also, for many years, hosted a daily talk radio show out of Kansas City, which is how I came to know Jim Sanders. I just talked to him over the phone. When Jim and his wife Liz, however, came to town, I got to meet them. And when you meet them, all of the cynicism or questioning begins to dissipate. You see that these are just really decent, good, honest, mid-American people who were railroaded for doing what good, honest American citizens ought to do. And especially Liz, Jim's wife, when you see a person like that, sweetheart, just a real decent, honorable person, when she ends up being arrested and convicted of conspiracy, it makes you wonder. Anita?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry about that. We've had a little bit of a problem with the line here disconnecting, and it just jumped out all of a sudden. So,
okay.
Joe, just forgive us for a moment if there's a little bit of tampering while things jump in and out, and I'm sorry, I missed the last 30 seconds of what you said.
I was going to say that it was really a meeting of Liz Sanders that inspired me to get involved with this project. This woman's a former flight attendant and trainer, just real, you know, a Filipino by descent, real good, decent, honorable person. She should never have been tried, let alone convicted of anything.
So your interviewing them was what really got you on the roll for this?
When I met them, they came to Kansas City where I live on a tour, and I got to talking to them, and then, you know, the conversations continued, and one thing led to another. And before I got involved, Anita, I said to them, I'd like to spend some time with you, see what your material is, because I didn't want to commit. This is a big project. You don't want to commit to it unless you're absolutely convinced that they have the truth. And so I visited them in Florida where they live. They're both convicted felons now. They're the two felons in Florida who didn't vote in the last election. And
do you want to, just for our listeners, do you want to go over their the charges?
Yeah, they were tried and convicted on conspiracy, basically conspiracy to steal government property. I mean, that's the literal charge. Jim Sanders, and it's kind of a long story here, but to cut it to the quick, Jim Sanders was an investigative reporter. His wife is a flight attendant. 53 TWA employees were killed in that plane crash. She was devastated, heartbroken. She introduced Jim to her friend who's a pilot, Terry Stacy, who worked at the investigation. Terry Stacy began bringing information to Jim Sanders, and Jim wrote a series of articles. They appeared in the paper nationwide. That led to the book, The Downing of TWA Flight 800. The leaking of that information led to his being charged, because he wouldn't roll over on Sanders, on Stacy. And they threw Liz in to intimidate him and harass him. They convicted them both. It's really one of the sadder moments in American journalism history.
Well, that's going to make any journalist think twice about discussing anything that's a sensitive subject.
And Anita, that's exactly why they did what they did. They wanted to silence opposition. And they certainly silenced it from within the investigation, and they silenced it from without. Point made.
Now, the fifth anniversary of the crash is almost upon us, right? That was July 17th?
The 17th of July, right?
Do you think that public awareness has changed much in the last couple of years? Are you noticing interest increase, decrease?
Well, I would say this, is that the video has created a groundswell of popular sentiment. It's not at a high level of visibility yet, I'll tell you that. But among the people who count, among airline pilots, among attendants, among trainers, among mechanics, among the Boeing plant, among CWA employees, this video is spread like wildfire. It's the thing they needed to communicate with, because it's a very visual subject. And we stuck to things, the only things that we could prove, Anita. And the result, I know already that CNN has seen it, I know that ABC has seen it, and I know that Fox has seen it. And they've asked our permission to show at least parts of it. We'll see on the 17th whether they're willing to commit.
Well,
I know O'Reilly's seen it. You know, we're banging on the doors, and anyone who's seen this video is convinced. When they walk into the video, they think, well, was it a mechanical problem or was it a missile? When they walk out of the video, the only question in their mind is, who pulled the trigger? Because we don't answer that for them.
Right. Well, I'm really glad to hear that you're getting some major interest in this, because right now, is it available anywhere other than WorldNetDaily?
Yeah, you can just give you a number. It's 1-888-US-AWARE, A-W-A-R-E, extension 800. 1-888-US-AWARE, extension 800. It's, you know, it's $25. Anyone can call and get it. We'll get it to you in a few days. That is our primary means of distribution right now. It only came out a few weeks ago. So the real challenge for us is to break it into the mainstream.
Right. Well, it sounds like you're getting some interest there, and that's good. That's really good.
Every morning, Anita, my inbox and my email is filled with correspondence from Boeing people, CWA people, airline people, people who know about these kind of subjects, and they're outraged. Witnesses, eyewitnesses, family members. They're outraged. There's a universal outrage among the people in the know. Right now, I'm not going to deceive myself into thinking that's the ordinary person, but it's growing every day.
Now, Jack, you mentioned Boeing.
Yeah.
There's a company that we haven't heard hardly anything about. What's their position?
Boeing is, everyone in the airline industry is compromised to a large degree, because so much of what they do depends on government approval. For mergers, for instance, for new routes, for new contracts, whatever. What's interesting about Boeing is that when the CIA showed its notorious video, which was created to discredit all the eyewitnesses, the one that transformed a missile attack on an airplane into a airplane noseless, suddenly becoming a rocket of its own and shooting up 4,000 feet, Boeing just owned it. They said, we had nothing to do with this video. We don't know how they created it. We had nothing to do with it. If you want to know what the eyewitnesses saw, talk to the eyewitnesses. That's Boeing's official position. They've been, they've been pretty coy about it. They've never signed on. They've never said, they've never agreed with the NTSB.
Right.
So that's where that is now.
So they're playing safe, but they're not going to come out and take,
feed
a bunch of lies.
Said, hey, the NTSB is right. Yeah, sure, the plane did blow up. They've never said that. They never will say that, no matter how much pressure is put on them. Same thing with the FAA. Same thing with with TWA or the IAMAW, the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, who came out and said they said that the NTSB position is a crock. They said it's false. They were as strong as they could possibly be in their rejection of the NTSB position. Of course, the NTSB suppressed that report, but the machinists and aerospace workers, it's a democratic union. They refused to roll over. There's a lot of pretty gallant people here, including the eyewitnesses, of course, and they're beginning to get their voice heard. The video finally gave them something they could latch onto, that they could show their friends.
Well, I'm really looking forward to seeing it. Lynn, too, I'm sure. We've got it on order here.
Yes.
So, you know, hopefully it won't be too long. But how many people did you actually interview for this video?
Well, among the eyewitnesses, we have on screen five of them, the five key eyewitnesses, the most critical ones, including the two I think that are most interesting that I'd like to talk about. One is Major Fritz Meyer, who is the TWA pilot. I'm sorry, not TWA pilot, the National Air National Guard pilot who was in his helicopter over Long Island. He saw the explosion in his face. He's been adamant in what he saw, what he's seen for the last 5 years now, and they refuse to listen to him. His co-pilot's the same. His co-pilot hasn't been quite as outspoken, but he and Fritz saw the same thing. That is, they saw these streaky lights streaking towards the plane. They saw what Fritz says is a high-velocity ordnance explosion. Meyer now, by the way, is a Vietnam veteran. He's had multiple rescue missions over North Vietnam. He said, "I know ordnance when I see it. This was a high-velocity ordnance explosion." He goes, "Yeah, sure, the fuel tank blew up, but it was the last event, not the first event." He goes, "The first events were ordnance, that is, explosives. There were missiles." He said it was and he's just one of 736 official eyewitnesses. This is the kind of thing we're hearing. That's what we have on tape. People have never seen Fritz Meyer speak before. It's appalling that that's the case, that he was... that his testimony was so suppressed.
Well, I know we do have a few official eyewitness statements on the record that were published in the early days after the flight,
yeah.
And they were pretty much consistent. If they saw anything, they saw what appeared to be a missile.
Right, they saw streaking lights, and you don't see a missile. It's not like you see a big...
Right, the streaking lights, yeah.
What you see is... Let me tell you the story. Do you have to take a break in, Nita? Because this is a 5-minute story.
No breaks needed here.
Okay. This is the most critical piece of evidence that we've discovered. And it takes a minute to explain, so bear with me.
Okay.
The most critical eyewitness is a guy named Mike Wire. Mike was a mechanic from Philadelphia. He was up for the day working on Beach Lane Bridge in West Hampton. At 8:30 that evening, it just so happened. Then Mike took a break from the switch room, which is an enclosed room on the bridge where he's working, walked up onto the bridge, leaned against the bridge, looked out against over the sea, as people tend to do when they're by the ocean. With that move, Mike Wire moved into a key place in what's going to prove to be American history. What Mike saw was what a lot of people saw. It wasn't unusual. At least 96 people, like Mike, saw this streak come off the horizon. He sees it come up from off the beach and over the roof of a beach house. He follows it out. It's streaking. It's a white smoke trail that is streaking, zigzagging, arching over, heading out to sea. It's moving in three dimensions. It disappears. A few seconds later, he sees a bright orange fireball. I mean, hundreds, thousands of people saw that, the explosion itself. He watches the fireball descend into the sea. You know, he tells his friends, then the next morning he goes back to Philadelphia, doesn't tell the FBI. You know, he's not a glory hound. But one of his buddies, one of his co-workers, calls the FBI and says, "Hey, you really need to talk to Mike Wire in Philadelphia because he saw everything." Well, a couple days later, Mike gets a phone call from an FBI agent. He gives him a 15-minute interview on the phone, and the agent fills out what's called a 302. It's a witness statement. And he describes just what I told you. You know, objects streaking out, 40-degree angle, smoke trail, disappears, arches over, orange fireball. The FBI agent in Philadelphia, and these people are on the level, they said, "Can we send an agent to your house?" And Mike says, "Sure, I'd be happy to participate, happy to cooperate." Mike is a veteran from Vietnam, era veteran. He served a year in Korea as a helicopter pilot, patriot, good citizen, decent guy. Not political, doesn't follow the internet at all, but, he wanted to help out, just like any citizen would. A week later, the FBI comes again. They spend 90 minutes with Mike. The agent fills out a very thorough and detailed and honest 302, the witness statement. It's all there in black and white. It looks like a cheap fireworks. Comes off the beach, behind the beach house, zigzagging out, smoke trail, orange tip, arches over, disappears, blah, blah, blah. Fireball descends. And that's all that Mike hears about. That's all he thinks about. It goes back around his life. In November of 1997, almost a year and a half later, Mike, like a lot of people, sees on the news at least a portion of that notorious CIA animation that says, the witnesses didn't see a missile. What they saw was a plane in crippled flight. The nose just sort of spontaneously blew off, and the plane ascended like 4,000 feet, and it confused people into thinking what they saw was a missile. Mike saw this, and at the time he said, well, they're probably just trying to pacify the public until they come up with the real answer. He didn't realize at the time how critical his own role was in this whole scenario. Nor would he, for some time, for several more years. The NTSB doesn't allow any witnesses at their hearing in 1997, right after that animation. They don't allow any eyewitness testimony at their hearing, and near 2000, case closed, everyone goes about their business. One problem here for the CIA and the FBI and the NTSB. They release, and this is just one of those little quirky things that happens. The, freedom of information, all that sort of stuff, they release the 302s, all the witness statements. Reed Irvine at Accuracy and Media is looking over the 302s. He's taking this seriously. He's been following this case from the beginning. Didn't believe it from the get-go, as most people didn't, who paid any attention, including virtually every pilot I've ever talked to. So Reed Irvine is looking over the witness statements, and he comes across one that seems to be the one that the CIA based its animation on. And it's and since Mike's name, his last name is Wire with a capital W, in one case the FBI agent mistakenly writes it with a small W. The person who redacts the names, blacks out the names, sees a small W Wire and doesn't black it out. Reed Irvine picks it up. He says, hey, this guy is the guy that they based the animation on. He calls Wire because they leave his name in town in Pennsylvania. He calls him up and says, hey, tell me, how is it that you changed your story? Because on your original 302 here, it says you sort of come off the beach, and it zigzagged out. And Mike Wire says, I never changed my story. And then Reed Irvine says, but the CIA says that they sent the FBI back to re-interview a year later. And Wire says, they never talked to me. They never came back to talk to me. They made this all up. The most critical eyewitness testimony, the one on which the CIA based its entire video, was entirely, totally fabricated. Let me repeat that. The most crucial piece of eyewitness testimony and evidence, the one on which the whole video was based, the one that discredited all the other witnesses, totally fabricated. They made it up. That's how bad the investigation is.
Wow. I bet you nobody would have thought a chance slip-up like that would have revealed such a thing.
No, and it's really a fluke that it happened. We brought Mike out to Beach Lane Bridge. The CIA never talked to him. The NTSB never talked to him. We brought him out to the site on Beach Lane Bridge. This is all in the video. And we said, Mike, tell us what you saw. Just give us an honest rendition of what you saw. And he tells us exactly what he told the FBI agent 4 years earlier. Yeah, I saw it come off the beach behind a house, looked like a cheap fireworks, and he's angling it out. And on the video, we show them the missile test that the NTSB ran, and it almost follows, it follows exactly what Mike is talking about. The zigzag, the arch, the disappearance. It's the same thing. And they all saw a missile. They saw two missiles, and it's appalling that it's taken this long to get the story out.
And so now what you're saying is that they have the original 302 file, and now you have his updated video testimony that this is in fact
the interesting thing is that, there should be another 302. We've challenged them. We've said, hey, if you went back to talk to Mike Wire, we have the old 302s. Yeah, we have copies of the telephone 302, the first one, and a week later, the 90-minute interview. Both of these took place in July of 96. There was another one that was supposed to have taken place a year later. That the CIA had the FBI go back and re-talk to Mike Wire. It never happened. We've challenged them publicly. Show us this 302. Show us who the agent was, where this interview took place, and when it took place, right? It didn't happen.
So this is just another example of a government agency outright lying.
This is the most blatant thing I've seen. I'm followed Oklahoma City. I've followed Waco. This is cold, hard, blatant corruption.
Can you, in all your investigation, did you actually come up with a possible reason why this would have happened?
Yeah, let me give you two words, two phrases which sums it all up. Clinton, 1996. That's all you need to know. We're 1 week before the Olympics. We're 1 month before the conventions. The man whose every breath is directed towards his re-election is cakewalking towards an easy victory, unless he's confronted with a catastrophe. On July 17th, that catastrophe happens.
So the U.S. shooting down one of its own planes would have pretty much dethroned the man.
If let me just give you two possible scenarios. Neither one of them is good. Your greatest vulnerability as a president is your perceived weakness as a commander-in-chief. On July 17th, 1996, and the FAA radar picked up a missile running right into the plane. This was common knowledge. It was reported that night. And no one denies that. They tried to say it was an anomaly or something, but no, the FAA went right into the National Security Office of the White House that moment. They said, we've got an object merging with Flight 800 just before this crash. And they tried to explain it away. So they knew what they were dealing with. They know who shot that plane down. I don't know. Not with strong enough confirmation to say it in the video or on air. But either of the two scenarios is deadly. The one is that a terrorist can infiltrate our coastal waters and blow an American airliner out of the air with 230 people on board. If you're the commander-in-chief, it's a huge embarrassment. A week before the Olympics, you got to call those Olympics off.
Right.
Everything is total jeopardy. Here's the other possibility. This is even worse. Let's say, imagine that scenario we had out in Hawaii a few months ago with the sub. You got these defense big fat cats on board watching this exercise. Let's say that you got these big fat cat Democratic donors watching an exercise take place, not 500 miles off the sea, because that would be inconvenient, right off the coast of New Jersey. And let's say they're having a coordinated, coordinated engagement capabilities. They're showing off their ability to simulate these missile attacks. They go out after a drone. The missile accidentally, and it's an accident, and they even didn't shoot this down on purpose if they did it. It locks onto a jetliner. They send up a second missile to take out the first one. They meet tragically at the plane. That kills your political career right there. No explaining that away. You're finished. You who have lived for re-election as your only motive all your life, your career, you're looking at a career in tatters. This is speculation. I don't know this for a fact. This is my best guess. I think what they tried to do is to play for time, to stall it past November, to throw up enough smoke that they could say, hey, we don't know it's a missile. Let's be prudent and reasonable in our search. No sense rushing to judgment. Let's find out what really happened. Push it back until November and hope for the best.
Of course, once things start getting pushed back, it's much easier just to maintain the party line rather than say, oops, look, we were wrong after all.
You're right. That's absolutely right. They realized they could, A, get away with it, and, B, to acknowledge that they had been BSing for 3 months would have been fatal. They just realized that, hey, we could pull this off. We could get away with this. The major media are going to roll over with us. They don't want us to lose. The last thing that the major networks want to do in the fall of 1996 is hand Bob Dole the election. They're going to play ball. They're going to keep their mouths shut. All of a sudden, the CIA is like and the FBI are their heroes. This is crazy. They never happened before, but it happened in November 96.
Can I bring up a third scenario?
Yep.
You mentioned two. On the manifest, was there anybody important on that flight?
No, you've just asked the question that most people ask, the most asked question. We've vetted that list pretty thoroughly. We don't see anyone on that plane worth taking out. Another possibility, though, along those lines, is that, and I've heard this from several TWA pilots, and I consider it a reasonably good source, is that at the last moment, an El Al plane and TWA changed places on that runway. It's possible that if it were a terrorist, they thought they were taking out an Israeli airline.
Okay.
Which would explain why no one at least seems to have taken credit for it.
I know that that question came into my mind right after the plane went down, simply because there seemed to be trouble getting the passenger lists out, and that kind of a delay you wouldn't really think would happen too much. You know, they would be able to zero in on them, and that stuck out in my head. So I don't know.
That raised the suspicions, there's no doubt about it.
It does raise the suspicions. But of course, you can't jump to conclusions, and sometimes, things are just lost in the confusion, and, I imagine it's pretty hard to deal with an emergency. I can just imagine what it's like. All of a sudden, the hospital's overrun, the police channels are overrun, and it's very easy to stand back after the fact and say.
Yeah, and especially given the fact that they can't release names. You know how they always have changes at the last minute and people jumping on or getting off. And, well, you don't want to give out a list of names that's wrong, you know, for starters. And,
exactly.
It was a nightmare for TWA. I mean, there's no doubt about it. They lost 53 of their own employees. You know, how many companies lose 53 employees in one fell swoop?
Right. That had to be very traumatic for...
Yeah, for the whole TWA family, right. That's why they're so angry now. They feel like they've been betrayed.
So...
I would challenge you guys to... Talk to any airline pilot, especially a TWA pilot, any TWA mechanic, any Boeing mechanic, and say, do you think that the government position was correct? You're not going to find them.
No, I have spoken to a few people that work on the airlines. Their reaction was the same kind of dismay that if there was any kind of spark, any kind of damage... Just due to the number of flights that take off daily over North America, planes would be blowing up on the tarmac there.
Right.
So this spark idea is just a complete fallacy. And if you watch, I was unfortunate to have to sit through one. It's gut-wrenching to hear somebody just sit there and lie with some kind of little fairy tale thing about, oh, yeah, we've traced it down to a wire that could have rubbed, and instead of 18 volts, it got, 45, and then, it's just disbelief. I can't believe they got the nerve to even say that. But
right. Well, I'll tell you what, is in the video, and this is what's the most damning indictment of the government's case, comes from the government's own documents. And we show that and reveal that. And in a sense, we were, and in some ways, this video could not have been made until, let me give out the phone number, by the way, because my publicist will kill me if I don't, 1-888-US-AWARE, AWARE, extension 800.
What was that? You want to give that again?
1-888-US-AWARE, A-W-A-R-E, extension 800. The, because in the August 2000 NTSB hearing, it was a two-day hearing, they played their hands. It's kind of like playing poker. Their cards are on the table. We know everything they've got. They've announced everything they've got. What they don't realize is they have so many sharp investigators, private investigators out there looking at everything they say. Well, they admit... In August of 2000, 4 years and $40 million later, is that they can't find the spark. They can't find the source of ignition. The IMAW says there is no source of ignition. That's the mechanics union. They said there is none. They were never able to find it. They can't blow up this Jet A fuel. It's you can stick a match into a can of Jet A fuel and it'll douse the match. It'll extinguish the match. It's not flammable. I mean, it has to be... Not in its inert state. It has to be violently shaken to have anything happen to it.
Yeah, and don't they spray an argon gas or something in there?
Yeah.
As well? Yeah, I forget the proper name, but...
Right, I mean, it's every bit of evidence, guys, is incriminating. Every bit of evidence says missile, including the voice, cockpit voice recorder, including the flight data recorder, including the lack of volatility of the fuel, the lack of ignition source. What happened to the metal, just the altering of that evidence, the misplaced and disappearing evidence.
Yeah, and the thing that bothered me was Jim Sanders, actually being charged. I mean, can you imagine? Here's the government outright lying.
Yeah.
And then they're coming up with a disinformation campaign.
Yeah.
And if anyone says... You know what, I have some proof here that you're lying, they'll charge you.
Right.
It doesn't get any worse than that.
That's a terrific point to make, because the same people who were charging him, the U.S. Justice Department, were the people he was accusing.
Yeah, no conflict of interest there.
No, none. And not only that, and what made it, you know, people out there listening saying, how could they convict him before a jury of his peers? Well, the jury was not allowed to know that Jim Sanders was a reporter. He was tried as though he were a scavenger. And that's the law they convicted him under. As though he were scavenging government property for resale. That's how they tried him.
Oh, great. Well,
they got away with it.
I guess what can be brought into the courtroom is a big part of it. I mean, it's one thing to say tried by your peers, but if all the information that's being presented is terribly slanted, there's...
Yes.
I have a hard time imagining how his profession could be excluded.
Well, you know, it's and Anita, what was, I think, particularly troubling to me is that the major media, the mainstream media, this took place in Long Island. I just sat and watched. They didn't say anything. They didn't protest. It wasn't one of their own. You know, they just could write them off, oh, Jim Sanders, some right-wing whack job. The hell with them, you know? It's not us. You know, we have, we've been approached, and this is very encouraging, by a big liberal New York distributor of videos and movies. And when they saw the video, they all sat there and watched it, and then they saw the Jim Sanders part, because we showed that in the video, how they were arrested, convicted, etc. They were disgusted with themselves. They said, how is it that we live in New York, and we're in the media, and we didn't even know this happened? You know? They were disgusted with their own brethren in the media. It shouldn't have happened.
Well, it's amazing, though, that people do get the opportunity to actually see after the fact what happened, and maybe somewhere down the road some of this will be set straight. I don't imagine, you know, the Sanders can ever really have it made up to them what they were put through.
No, but I think you're right, Anita. I mean, they're felons now. I mean, you know, when they travel, they have to get permission. When they return, they have to have urine tests, you know? I mean, we had the premiere in Kansas City. We had a big screen premiere. We had a full house. They couldn't come. They couldn't get permission. You know, fortunately, they weren't sent to prison. The judge, I think, realized that to imprison them would be to martyr them and cause more problems than it was solved. But since they'd already achieved the effect they wanted to, that is, hey, don't talk or you're going to go to jail. You're right, Anita. It's very sad.
Well, this better be a very big wake-up call to people listening to the program here, because if people think that TWA 800 is the only place where this sort of thing can happen, I imagine there are probably lots of situations in which journalists are hushed up and that we never hear about. And that gets pretty scary when a government can just arbitrarily do that. This is a country, the United States, and Canada has also, you know, waved this sort of freedom flag, that a country which boasts freedom of speech.
Yeah.
And this flies in the face of that.
Yeah, Canada is even worse than the United States, as you know, because they have gag orders on crimes. But it doesn't happen a lot, but it does happen. And if it can happen as something as public... as, you know, as the Flight 800, you know, where you've got literally thousands of people who saw this, 736 of them talked to the FBI, where you have, you know, FAA missile, you know, reports of missile strikes, you've got explosive residue found all over the plane, you've got, I mean, just one bit of evidence after another, and they get away with it? Yeah, it makes you wonder. At least in Russia, in the Soviet Union, people distrusted, people knew that Pravda was a fraud. You know, they knew it was a hoax. Well, in the United States, we don't know that about our networks. I mean, a lot of us do, but not all of us do. And we should.
Yeah, that's scarier, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, because we're lulled into thinking they're telling us the truth.
Now, if you have maybe two anecdotal stories, can you tell me your best experience with the press and maybe the worst?
In terms of Flight 800?
Yeah, and have you made any kind of publicity about your video? Campaign?
Yeah, I'll just say some good experiences. And again, I would say, you know, what was very encouraging to me is the first person who saw this video was Lucianne Goldberg. And I just happened to be in New York, and Jim Sanders gave me her address, and I dropped it off at her apartment. And she emailed me the next day, just an incredibly flattering and helpful email, and she put us on a radio show. So I knew right away that we're, and that was very encouraging. The person who's been most helpful for us is Joseph Farah, who's the publisher of WorldNet Daily, the world's most popular website. That's worldnetdaily.com. Not only has he been selling the video for us, but he's been, we've been writing a series of corroborating articles that add detail that we can't get into in the video. And the response has been just extraordinary. On the major network side, you know, we've had a lot of, I tell you what, I've been beating my head against this wall, and I get been patronized by more people than I ever want to be patronized by again, but we're beginning to break through. Fox just requested our permission to excerpt the video on the air. CNN just requested our permission.
Wow.
And this is thanks to a liberal friend of mine who is an intermediary who works for CNN. And he's put his neck on the line to help me out here.
You know what, I hate to say this, to be that distrusting, but I wonder if you shouldn't have a clause that says no, you show the whole thing or nothing.
No, I don't worry about that, because there's no part of it that's exculpatory for them, you know what I mean?
So nothing can be taken out of context.
No,
that
there's nothing they can really do.
Well, that's good.
Every bit of it, even every 30-second bit of it, just causes them problems. You know what they could do with a piece of video footage if they want to, but they have that power right now with their own footage, and they've been doing it for the last 5 years. This challenges them. Everyone who sees it is convinced. Because it's a very straightforward documentary. It's not, you know, we don't pull punches or we don't manipulate evidence or information. It's just, we just hang them with their own news.
How long is it?
It's 1 hour long.
Oh, wow. There's got to be a lot of information in an hour.
Yeah. And it's very tightly produced because I wanted to keep it under an hour. We could easily have made it two, but, you know, for cost and for future showings, that's our... I know they've also seen it at ABC. You know, I'll tell you who's been most disappointing to me.
Who's that?
Is the mainstream conservative media. I don't want to name names, but you can imagine who they are.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would have thought ABC or something.
What's
like that?
That?
I would have thought ABC.
Yeah, I mean, the mainstream media you expect resistance from. But the conservative media, you know, the magazines,
right,
radio talk shows, the big ones, the TV personalities.
So you're not getting too many people in positions where they are, for example, as you say, personalities coming forward and taking the stand. It's more of a occasional bit of network interest.
Yeah, we haven't had the champion we need. On, you know, it would be great if someone like a Rush Limbaugh or a, you know, someone at Human Events or the Weekly Standard for whom I write, you know, someone in one of those publications that are read by people of influence would stand up and say, let's tell this story. That's not happening.
Well, you know, maybe it just takes for other people to talk about it a little bit. And,
right, that's what's going to happen. Oh, they'll get on it, but... They should be the ones who are breaking it. They've had it handed to them on a platter, and they've turned it down. That's scary. Thank God for the Internet. Thank God for talk radio. Because we're making headway. And we'll leapfrog, and we'll go right to the networks. Because it's so compelling, the evidence.
Or hopefully you'll find some, like our show, Internet shows that bypass the political... the handcuffs that are on these major networks.
Right, and what you'll find happening, guys, is that you know, someone listens to your show who had some influence, is an airline pilot or is a head of a union or something, who says, hey, let me get that video. He watches that video, and, you know, he'll show it to 10, 20 of his friends. We've had that all the time. You know, people say, I'm going to show this to 100 people. And I say to him, you know, it'd be nice if you bought it, but our goal is to get the word out. You know, I'd rather people, if they want to duplicate it, I don't care, as long as they get the word out. Of course, I'd rather they buy it at 1-888-US-AWARE, extension 800, but...
Extension 800, imagine that.
There it is. Easy to remember.
Did you say AWARE with an A on the end?
A-W-A-R-E.
Oh, A-R-E, okay, it sounded like a... Okay, very good. Well, hopefully you'll get a bunch of orders after this program is posted.
Well, I hope so, and I appreciate you guys having me on. It's very, very, very bold and courageous of you.
Well, that's what we try to do. We try to have interesting people on who are somewhat being ignored by the major press and that have a legitimate story.
Yeah.
And I think even when I heard way back Pierre Salinger speak of the thing, I just thought, oh, this is a cover-up.
Yeah, Salinger is an interesting case because he was probably right, but he went out a little prematurely. He didn't have his information together as solidly as he should have to put his neck on the line like that. I don't think he understood how the media game had changed. Just because he was Kennedy's press secretary and a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter in 1997-6, that didn't cut any weight anymore, you know?
Yeah, but at least he did.
Storyline.
I mean, it forced it to be in the news. You know, he has coming out with the story, no matter what has happened,
yeah,
saying he had heard that it was a missile and maybe by the Navy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what you need, essentially.
Well, I have to think, you know, if the networks are starting to pick you up, it's just a matter of getting a little momentum going.
The momentum's there. I can feel it every day. I can feel it every morning. I look at my email. And the Internet's been hugely important for us. There's no doubt about that. And especially what's happening now is the resonance among the people in the know, the pilots especially. They have a lot of power.
Yeah.
They're organizing.
Yeah, it's one thing to have your people questioning things at a grassroots level when they're off in their separated little areas, but when
right.
you get an organized bunch of people in a position of power, that's a little different.
No, that's exactly right, Anita. And I was talking to a head of this pilots association today who called me and is entirely he's organizing right now. He's not the first pilot I've talked to. I've talked to literally 100 pilots. And they're all on the same page. And, you know, if they decided as a group, if they just decided, hey, we're going to take one day off unless you pursue this in a public and reasonable way, I will take 1 week off, you know.
Yeah, but
don't you think we wouldn't get our way?
Do you think they're willing to even go that far? Do you think they're even considering that, taking
no,
a day?
Not right now. They have a long way to go before they get there. But that's just the best case scenario.
Yeah.
It could happen, especially in a given among TWA pilots.
Yeah, but yet I have that yet again disillusioned feeling that we didn't hear anything really from Boeing, and you'd think that they'd be complaining that their jet was not the problem, yet when everything else is saying it's the spark that did it, and if they're a company that big has been told, just keep your mouth shut and you'll keep the contracts coming and just ride out with this one.
Oh, see, Boeing is in no position to protest. I mean, every contract that they execute with a foreign power has to be approved by the government. So, for instance, if they're going to do business in China or wherever else they're going to do business, they've got to go through a ton of approval. They're totally compromised.
Yeah, compromised is a good word.
They have protested quietly. I mean, especially when the CIA animation came out, they were not subtle in their denial of the validity of that, but they're in a rough position.
Well, I guess sometimes the best way to express your disapproval is by not saying a whole lot. If you're going to get, I mean, I guess that if you're on the Boeing side, perhaps you don't really want to have your company go under because all your funding gets yanked,
right?
Just because you want to, the world to know the truth. Especially, I suppose, if they're sitting back and hoping somebody else just blows the lid off it and that takes the heat off them. So maybe you're doing this for a lot of people, really, when you think about it. I have to wonder.
I've gotten a lot of email from inside of Boeing, and I know they're watching it at the Boeing plant. I know it's being passed around. Especially among the people, the engineers and mechanics, people who actually build the airplane.
Well, that is encouraging, really.
Yeah.
And like I said, that's a lot of feedback. It hasn't been out for very long.
No, we've only had it out for a few weeks. So, and our distribution is, all through the internet and talk radio. I mean, we don't, it's not like we have a national campaign. So it's, you know, it's getting out there sort of like a, almost like a pyramid, you know, where I know it's getting passed around. I know people are telling other people. You have constantly people coming back and buying, you know, multiple orders to send to their friends and so on and so forth, especially friends in the know. That's where it's spreading now among people who have some knowledge and interest in aviation stuff. As well as people who care about the Republic.
Well, we're very interested here to get our first copy.
Well, yeah. Now, have we sent you one yet? Or,
well, actually, I ordered one through WorldNet Daily.
Oh, okay. Very good. I should have gotten one sooner. I'm on vacation now, anyhow, so I'm sort of away from my source, but nonetheless, it's good. Where are you guys, by the way?
Vancouver.
Oh, okay.
Canada. We're Canadians.
Oh, you're Canadian. Okay. I think that's a technical accent there. Yeah.
We don't think we have an accent, but then other people seem to think we do, so I don't know. Well, maybe the A here.
Yeah. No, that's great. I'm glad you guys take an interest. This is an international problem that we need to solve it on the ground level.
Well, many of the issues that we deal with actually seem to be American issues, but I would say that all in all, many of these things are international, and that they reflect how we view our world and what we're willing to roll over and take. And
yes.
You know, as you mentioned, Canada's got its share of problems too with freedom issues, and we all need to be kind of diligent.
Oh no, especially in the freedom of the press issues, especially in regards to crime. I know that's a real bone of contention in Canada. Are you not shielded from the facts of cases?
Oh yeah, you wouldn't believe some of the things you've had. Canada's worst sex offender.
I followed that case.
Yeah, you know, Ivan Shearing, and nobody was allowed to know anything about his case, and you're not going to hear much in the media about the fact that he's out walking the streets now.
Yeah, it's got to be a little frightening.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
You know, just because he had a lot of perhaps political people supporting his cult following, and I don't know, it just makes you wonder, doesn't it? But how something like that can be closed off. Canada does have its definite culpabilities in that department. And
Yeah.
I think that the U.S. is freer in many regards, but there are some areas, I think, where people don't even realize that those freedoms have been usurped. And like I say, with what happened with the Sanders, this is a classic example, and we have to be so careful that this kind of thing doesn't keep going, because thank goodness for the Internet and the ability for people to quickly pass this type of information back and forth, because I just have to wonder how much of today's awareness would even be happening if it wasn't for people being able to, you know, pick up on their own and pass information along.
Oh, you're absolutely right. In fact, were it not for the Internet and talk radio, the alternative media in general, the last 8 years in America would have been called Camelot 2. I mean, people would have been praising Bill Clinton up and down. There would have been no Monica Lewinsky, or, you know, there'd been no China Gate, there'd been no Trooper Gate, there'd been no, you know, File Gate, or, you know, every other gate. The media would have passed on all of them. Every one of those issues was forced from the ground up.
Yeah.
And in every case, the mainstream media had to be handed, like, DNA evidence before they even acknowledged it was happening, you know?
Well, it is interesting, because it seems to be there is a bit of a separation going on where people still turn on, like, I mean, I'll turn on CNN,
right,
but that's not where I'm going to go to get my real hardcore information. And actually, what I find is a wide spectrum of places will actually help you piece it all together a lot better than just, you know, signing on to one station.
You know, I think what you're right, Anita. I think what you're finding in North America now are two classes of people. One is the people who know a lot, because there's so much more information available from a wide variety of sources. And then there's another class of people who don't know hardly anything at all. They just watch headline news. And unfortunately, they all get to vote.
Yeah. Well, I have to wonder if perhaps because we've got a new administration here, you know, the Bush administration, maybe some of these networks don't mind jumping on the, well, maybe there was a cover-up and this and that, because that's a different administration now.
No, you're right. And in fact, they're no longer protecting Bill Clinton. He doesn't have to be protected. And that with the Mark Rich affair, I think it surprised everyone. It surely surprised me, because it was hardly the most egregious thing Clinton had done, that is pardoning Mark Rich and all those other scoundrels. But for some reason, after all these years of pent-up protection, pent-up rage at Clinton, the person they felt they had to protect anyhow, they all let loose. And they treated it like it was the worst thing he'd ever done.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, it seems that the more the media picked at Clinton, the more the public sort of liked him.
Yeah.
Maybe because they were picking the wrong reason. If you're going to go after somebody, make it something legitimate. Because,
make it something legitimate, right.
You know,
and make a case for it. Don't at the same time do a superficial attack, and while at the same time you're creating real villains out of, like, in the Monica case, you know, where they, yeah, sure, they were picking on Clinton a little bit, but the real people they were going after were Ken Starr and Linda Tripp and people who were telling the truth. So that at the end of the day, you know, Bill Clinton has a 65% approval rating, and Ken Starr has a 15% approval rating. You know, that's management of the news. That's manipulation. Shouldn't have happened.
Yeah, well, people, I guess, even if maybe it's like a family thing, you don't mind pointing your finger at a president, but you don't want the world to see your country as being weak, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I don't put the word here.
More involved in that, I think.
Yeah.
Partly because in the United States, I don't know what it's like in Canada, but in the United States, the last survey I saw was 89% of D.C. correspondents voted for Bill Clinton in 1992 in a three-way race.
Huh.
43% of Americans did, 89% of the media in the District of Columbia did. He's their horse, you know? He's their guy. And that's inevitable. It comes out in the reporting. You can't not let that out in the reporting.
But it seems to me, though, that just about pretty much every president they've had in since Kennedy has been somebody's guy. So maybe it doesn't matter who's in there if that person's in there, and stuff happens. I mean, I don't think that these cover-ups are going to end just because Clinton's gone. If there's a new tragedy tomorrow, there will be somebody else whose job needs to be protected and a country that needs its reputation protected.
Yeah, no, you're right. There's at some level there'll be cover-ups, but the media will give Democratic candidates much more leeway. And the American media have already spent more time investigating Jenna Bush and her underage drinking than they did, you know, Bill Clinton, the accusations of rape against Bill Clinton.
Yeah, they really did make a big deal out of that. And I didn't pay much attention to it, because what are you going to say other than what we'd already seen?
What, an 18-year-old college student drinking?
Yeah, but I did see the camera flash across the family sitting there, and boy, it looked like Bush Sr. was just steaming mad.
Oh, yeah.
I can guess so. But all that aside, it seems pretty crazy with all the serious issues that are out there that's what ends up being the main talk in the media. But it's kind of like Hollywood media these days, isn't it?
Right. Let's look at the whole Gary Condit story, which is, you know, the perfect summer media affair, you know. Yeah, sex, crime, potentially missing woman, you know.
Yeah.
It's like O.J. once again.
Right, we're going to hear about this one for a long time, aren't we?
I think so.
Unless she turns up, she's been having a little fun in the Caribbean or something somewhere.
I don't think that's the case.
Doesn't sound like it, though, does it? They would have found her by now, I suppose.
I think so.
Big question.
I appreciate you guys having me on. It's been a very pleasure. It's great talking to people in Canada, too.
Well, before we wind it down, though, is there anything that you wanted to bring up that we've forgotten to bring up?
I would say we've covered most of the salient details, but I think what people have to understand, and it's a very visual subject. You know, you have to, and that's why video is so important. Your books can't do it in some cases. You can't share a book with a friend, especially when you have to judge for yourself how credible are the eyewitnesses. You know, if you just read about them, they're just people on paper. When you see them, when you meet them, you begin to see, and you see their body language and their veracity and their truth-telling, you say to yourself, these people are for real. When you see them contrasted with the people on the National Transportation Safety Board, for instance, or the CIA, and you see the difference between people who are telling the truth and people who aren't, you can make up your own mind. When you see what the CIA animation said about this, you know, this alleged, you know, to hear about their ascending plane theory makes sense unless you see it. When you see the difference between a missile streaking in three dimensions out and away from a beach, and a little blip, electronic blip off in the horizon, where the plane might have ascended, you get a feel for just how deep and how brazen a cover-up this was. So that is just a large picture, every detail.
And talk about subversion. I was on a talk show right around when that happened, and the comment was brought up, what business does the CIA have even to be creating using their manpower and funds to create this
excellent
video?
Excellent question. You would think that the media would have jumped all over that, you know? They distrust the CIA. Everyone does. What was the CIA doing there in the first place, you know?
No, and if you take that further, the last letter, A, is an agency. It's working for somebody.
Yeah.
It's working for the Department of Defense.
Yeah.
And what are they putting all their time in unless they have to cover up something?
No, exactly. Excellent question. And those questions were never even asked. And that's the disturbing part of this all. The media never even asked the basic questions that the average guy in the street was asking. Hey, what's the CIA doing here? The CIA, you know? And then why did they show that animation only once? And then it disappeared. Well, because every aviator who saw it just thought it was pathetic. Ludicrous. You look at we asked people what they thought of the cartoon, these aviators. Pathetic, ludicrous, absurd, preposterous, you know. And no eyewitness saw that. You know, all the 302s are available to read now. You're not going to find anyone who said, yeah, I saw the plane get hit. I saw the nose fall off. And then I saw the plane shoot up like a missile. No one saw that. Everyone else who saw it said the plane fell out of the sky like a rock as soon as it blew up.
So they didn't even have one eyewitness that would have corroborated?
Not one. There is not. So that's why they had to make up this eyewitness statement. That's why they had to use Mike Wire. And here's just one last detail I'll give you. The question is, of all 736 people, why choose Mike Wire as the man upon whose interview you're going to fabricate? And think about this. Think about where this took place. On the south coast of Long Island, a very exclusive place. Most of the people who saw the video, who saw the explosion, rather, saw it from their yacht clubs, from the decks of their summer homes, from their boats, right? One guy sees it from a bridge. He's a union mechanic from Philadelphia who goes home the next morning. If you're the CIA and you're asking yourself, okay, of all 736 people, which of these people has least access to the media? Which of these people is least likely to realize that it was his witness testimony that we fabricated?
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
The answer is Mike Wire in Philadelphia.
Yeah, he's from a different city altogether. Not likely to be chatting with his buddies in a bar that night.
Not political, not on the internet, you know, no bones to pick, you know, no buddies who work for CNN, you know. The CIA's business is deception. That's why they picked the CIA. Actually, they did a pretty good job, you know.
Yeah, well, if it does come down to that, where air flights and confusion are concerned, this isn't the first for them, actually. With the Korean flight 007, they had released this little notice to everybody that the flight was safely on the soil in Russia.
Yeah.
So,
right, that's another story. Well, I didn't want to get into
that. No, I won't go there, but it does make people think, you know, if the CIA is releasing press statements or videos or anything to do with an air flight, maybe we should actually look a little closer.
Right, their business is deception.
That's right. And then we can keep a sense of humor about it. And anyways, you know, it's been wonderful having you here.
Well, Anita, I'm thrilled that you've had me on. I love to talk to my friends in Canada. I try to listen every night to, All Things. No, what's the name of that show that comes out of there? What's the name of the show? Talk Back?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I keep up with my Canadian news. And in fact, I spend my summers in, literally I can see Canada from out my window. I'm on Lake Erie. Literally right on Lake Erie. So on a clear day I can see across. And, so keep up the good work up there, guys. Keep them honest, too.
Yeah, well, you hang in there, and we're going to count on...
phone number one more time, if I could.
Sure, please do.
We're going to post it on the website, too.
Yeah, and 1-888-US-AWARE, U-S-A-W-A-R-E, extension 800. you can go to my website, which will give you some information, which is cashill.com. That's CASHILL.com. Or even better is to go to worldnetdaily.com, where they've been really doing us a... There's a lot of collaborating articles that go along with the video and explain it in more detail. That's worldnetdaily, one word, .com. So, hey, Anita, guys, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, thank you again for being here. And, yeah, Lynn's pretty good at posting up connections there, so people want to search your stuff out, they should be able to find it.
Okay, terrific.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. Well, this has been Black Op Radio number 44 with Len Osanek and Anita Langley. The date is July 12, 2001, and we are just listening to Jack Cashill at TWA 800. Well, one more, Len. Good to be here with you. Thanks a lot.
Yes, and we'll be taking next week off.
Right, so back in the comments with the new John Thomas, right?
Yeah.
Listening to Black Op Radio, broadcasting weekly from the Fiasco Brothers Recording Studio in Vancouver, Canada. You're listening to the Fiasco Brothers Radio Network.